The Military Compensation and Retirement Modernization Commission has finished its Herculean task. It's come up with a wide range of recommendations. Some of the 15 suggestions revealed yesterday seemed like obvious changes needed for decades. Others are likely to cause heartburn among military service members, retirees, and their families, and pushback from Capitol Hill. Federal News Radio's executive editor Jason Miller tells us why the commission believes all of them are not only needed, but achievable. Jason, good morning.
Good morning, Tom.
All right, so give us a little background on the commission. Start with the more obvious recommendations that it made.
Well, the commission has worked on these recommendations for about 18 months. And, you know, if you remember, Tom, you guys have had people on your show over the last 18 months. Congress created the commission, the White House and the Defense Department chimed in with ideas, overall structure, and then they went to work over the last 18 months and getting feedback from more than 150,000 active and retired service members. They traveled to 55 military installations around the world, and they met with every major military and veteran organization. They really tried to get as much input as they could. Alfonso Maldon is the chairman of the commission. He says all nine members were in unanimous agreement with the recommendations.
We've said many times before that this is not a cost-cutting drill, that our efforts were not to go out to cut costs. Rather, what we've done is we've focused on reforms that could modify the structure of the compensation programs in a way that would bring about effectiveness and efficiency for those programs and provide us with an opportunity to protect the benefits or to maintain those benefits or improve those benefits for the service members.
Now, Maldon spoke during a press briefing on the recommendations yesterday in Arlington, Virginia. The commission says it focused on trying to answer three specific questions. How best can they ensure DOD delivers the intended benefits to its service members, their families, retirees, and others? How best can DOD ensure that delivering those benefits, they're doing it in an effective manner? And then finally, what is the clear path to modernize these services? Tom, as you know, many of them have not, you know, have been around for 50, 60, 70 years, and no one's taken a really hard look at, okay, what can be done to bring them into, if you will, the 21st century.
Yeah, I guess many of them go back to the pre-volunteer military days.
And many go back to Vietnam as well. The GI Bill, the Montgomery GI Bill goes back to 1973. I had to look that up, and I was surprised not only that it was only 40 years old, but that it was 40 years old at the same time. So I think there's just a lot of things that have been building up over the years. So the research that the commission did, it came up with these recommendations, and some of them, you know, you can just step back and go, okay, that makes sense. Let me give you one example. There's a program that DOD has that gives, you know, food stamp assistance to its service members who are in need. And instead, what they're recommending, the commission says, is why don't we have them sign up for the USDA SNAP program instead? Bob Daigle is the executive director of the commission. He says, for instance, in 2013, only 285 service members used this DOD-based food stamp program. He said they could easily move to the USDA SNAP program and get more benefits. Now,
right
Daigle
now,
says another obvious...
patrons get groceries that cost plus...
Now, Daigle says another obvious one is streamlining the commissaries and exchanges.
Right now, commissary patrons get groceries that cost plus a 5% surcharge. The recommendation is to maintain that, but to gather some efficiencies in the back office functions by combining the commissaries and the exchanges into one organization with a single manager.
So nobody wants the commissaries or exchanges to go away. I think that was a discussion point many, many months ago. What he's saying is we could just be more efficient the way we run them, and I think that makes a lot of sense. And one more I'll mention real quick, Tom, is that Montgomery GI Bill that I mentioned earlier. Daigle says the post 9/11 GI Bill is much more generous, and as we talked about, Montgomery GI Bill is 40 years old. Maybe it's just time for it to sunset and drift away. Not that people would lose anything, but they'd get better benefits off the post 9/11 one.
All right. So, Jason, which recommendations are going to be more difficult to find agreement on?
Yeah, that's going to – there's several big ones that are going to upset
13.
Some people. Exactly. No, not quite the other 13, but a good chunk of them. And I think, you know, if they're not going to make people upset, it's going to make them at least uneasy because we'll use the old business expression, the cheese will be moved. Let me start with the big one that received a lot of attention over the last day or so. The commission recommends changing how members of the National Guard and Reserves, the families of service members, and non-Medicare eligible retirees get insurance. Daigle says the goal would give these groups more options in the healthcare market, the private sector market, and eliminate a hole in coverage when members of the Guard or Reserve are called up to active duty.
TRICARE for Life, on the other end of the spectrum, remains unchanged. Medicare-eligible retirees would continue to have access to TRICARE for Life. In the intervening period, for the family members, again, Guardians and Reserve, and the non-Medicare-eligible retiree, they would have access to a menu of private sector insurance plans. For the active-duty family members, there would be a new basic allowance for health care that's created that compensates the family members for the costs of the private sector insurance. That includes both the premiums for the private sector insurance and expected out-of-pocket costs.
Now, this change would not impact active-duty service members. They would still use TRICARE. Nothing changes for active-duty service members. Daigle says the families, the Guard and Reserves, and non-Medicare-eligible retirees would not be put on the Federal Employee Health Benefits the Federal Employee Health Benefit Program, the FEHBP. In fact, DOD would have to create an entirely new insurance market, and this new insurance plan would have to accept coverage areas under that included the military treatment facilities. So that's why the FEHBP would not work here. The second hot button issue is around guaranteed retirement payments. The commission first would reduce the percentage of pay for the 20-year veteran, for instance, from 50% of their annual pay for life to 40% of their annual pay for life. Now, the commission, though, would substitute that lost money by doing three things. First, after 12 years, the service member would get a cash payment retention bonus that would be put toward their retirement. Second, the service member from the day they sign up for the military would be enrolled in the Thrift Savings Plan, the TSP. And 3% of their pay would be invested in the TSP. Now, obviously, they have control over how much goes in, but they would be automatically enrolled with 3%. And then third, the government would invest into the TSP on behalf of the service member. So that's how they're making up that lost 10%. Now, Daigle's offers this example. So if you're an E7 in the military and you spent 20 years in the military and decided to retire, under the current program, your defined benefit annuity would be $201,000. If you went under this new plan, your defined benefit annuity, again, 40% for the rest of your salary for the rest of your life, would only be $161,000. But between the TSP, the retention bonus, and the government's contribution, Daigle says that same E7 would end up in the end with $248,000, so they would receive almost $50,000 more than they would have under the current plan.
You're spreading the retirement benefit to a larger portion of the force. Right now, somewhere between 17% and 19% of the force actually reaches 20 years of service and benefits from the current retirement plan. Under the proposed retirement plan, 75% of the force would get retirement assets.
Now, in all these 15 recommendations, the commission says the government would save about $12.5 billion a year. Obviously, that's not a huge chunk of change, but it's a progress in the right direction. And the commission's chairman, Alfonso Maldon, offers this reminder. The goal wasn't to cut costs. He repeated that several times yesterday. It was to modernize the retirement and benefit system while not changing the impact, not having a huge impact or any impact on the service members, their families, and retirees.
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller. So, having had Alfonso Maldon say that, what's the reaction on Capitol Hill and also within the military community itself?
Well, interesting. I think everyone just wrote from the same set of talking points or the page. Mostly been positive, but really everyone said, we're going to review these recommendations closely, and that's all they gave you. So, for the most part, that means nobody wants to tip their hand on what they really think yet. So President Obama put out a statement saying he will work with civilian and military leaders and lawmakers on looking at and implementing these recommendations. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel said while the commission proposals will not impact the 2016 budget request that's due out Monday, they will help inform the negotiations over the next year. Hagel says he specifically appreciates the commission's support for grandfathering in current service members and retirees with its recommended changes on retirement pay. He says the focus on protecting future recruitment and retention was important, and the attempt to propose savings to ensure all military will be able to field a ready, agile, modern force capable to meet present and future threats. That's all positive from Hagel's perspective. Now, Congressman Mac Thornberry, the Armed Services Committee chairman, says he too will review the recommendations with a keen eye on how they will affect or may not affect the military's ability to recruit and retain top quality individuals. And then finally, Tom, also heard from the Military Officers Association. They say they're pleased with the commission that it finally released this report. Its main concern is around the health and welfare of the all-volunteer force. The most important element of that all-volunteer force is the retention of experienced, high-quality, mid-grade NCO and officers. And that came from retired Navy Vice Admiral Norb Ryan, who's the president and the CEO of MOA. Now, we do have a link to the full report. We have reactions. We have recommendations. Everything right there on federalnewsradio.com.
Now, Jason, I just have one question. Despite the protestations of the chairman of the commission, doesn't the military, and hasn't they been saying, haven't the brass been saying, haven't the past four defense secretaries been saying that they need to bend the future cost curve of retirement and health benefits in the military because they can't afford what their actuarial costs actually are?
And it's funny because someone asked that question yesterday too, and Malden and some other people of the commission that were at the press conference kind of said, right, but we had a specific goal in mind. Our goal is not to come in and cut costs. He said that time and again. Our goal is to modernize, and if we could become more efficient by modernizing the compensation and benefits, then that's all good. But our goal was not just to come in and cut slash and burn the figures and the dollar figures.
All right, so no mention of like cutting retirement or cutting benefits for future people that join, but grandfathering in those that are there now.
Well, the idea would be to set up this thrift savings plan model after really what the government did for the civilian side back in the early 80s, which was, you know, create the TSP, a less defined benefit program, because the goal here is that if you just even take down that 10% mark, that's going to save DOD a lot of out of pocket money, and then the TSP, they're going to have contributions of their own from their paycheck, so that they're seeing that on compound interest, all those other factors of dollars and cents that can build up over time. That's how they see that that's a bigger benefit and saves them money.
All right. Well, we'll have to see how that plays on the Hill. I think we're not done with this one yet.
Oh, I think we'll be covering this for quite a while, Tom.
Right.
Yes.
Jason Miller is Federal News Radio's executive editor. As always, thanks for that report.
My pleasure.